Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. And, we thought today would be a good day to talk about GLP-1s agonists, I should say.
GLP-1 receptor agonists.
Receptor agonists, along with in the relationship to cardiovascular disease and cardiovascular help. Help.
Especially semaglutide, Ozempic, Wegovy, because that's a little bit more in the news recently for this specific question or concern or whatever people have.
Yeah, so there's a concern, and we've seen, you know, I don't want to name names. Actually, I will. I saw Peter Attia posted about. We talked about this before. Peter Attia.
Poor Peter Attia. Peter Attia. You know, God, he really hates us now because we keep calling him out. But he just dabbles in things that are so far beyond his expertise, and that's just.
Anyway. Yeah, you see the same thing with Andrew Huberman and all these other guys that, you're experts in something, and then you just decide to be experts in everything. So that's not really how things work. Anyway, discussed how there were. Increases in heart rate, pulse. And that does happen. There's receptors, GLP-1 receptors in the atria, SA node, the sinoatrial node that helps the electricity of your heart basically pumping. And so that's one of the thoughts of why these GLP-1 receptors increase beats per minute. And when you look at all the trials, and so I think he mentioned that, in some of his patients, they're all wearing their little rings and Apple watches and whatever else that show in some people, you can see an exaggerated response in some people. We see it. Some people have nothing. And then you see a little increase and then actually see a decrease over time.
And some people, and just to be clear though, for people listening to this, when we talk about heart rate increases, for example, semaglutide or Ozempic in the big cardiovascular outcome trial in patients with obesity, type 2 diabetes published a few years ago, this is pretty average. This is pretty typical for these medications. The average pulse increase from a baseline of 72 to by 2 beats per minute. So that's not that much, but it did raise concerns once upon a time when these were first being used. So we've been using these for 15 years and in patients almost with type 2 diabetes and a high risk for cardiovascular disease, it was definitely a thought, which is why we do these cardiovascular outcome trials.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this before, the first big trial that you were actually there when they presented, the LEADER trial.
Yeah.
That was liraglutide, which is what we see in Victoza and for obesity, Saxenda. That was the first one to show decreases in major adverse cardiovascular events.
Including death, mind you.
Death.
Yeah, death. For that one, that trial specifically.
So you become immortal when you take these drugs. I'm kidding. We don't get paid yet. Not yet.
Well, and nothing, by the way, all these things that reduce cardiovascular risk, they're not perfect. It's statistically significant. It's good, but nothing reduces risk down to zero. Okay. Nothing we have does it.
So the concern would be is like, hey, like you're increasing your heart rate. What are these things doing to cardiovascular disease and cardiovascular events? Well, turns out they reduce them, despite having averages of increase in beats per minute of your heart rate and pulse. And this is also, though, it's important to know the right population to prescribe these medicines in. The recent trial that came out, it hasn't come out. The actual study hasn't come out. The top line results came out. And some people, don't like this because it's a way for maybe pharmaceutical companies to pump up their stock and all this stuff. I don't know.
Oh, the announcement? You mean the top line results?
Yeah, and it does.
Yeah, it's probably worse than some of these preprint publications that come out even before full like peer review and stuff. It's I can see that. It's an issue.
Probably. So the SELECT trial, which basically looked at, you can pull it up if you want, but it basically looked at semaglutide in those with cardiovascular disease. And it
top And the key with that is obesity with cardiovascular disease, but not type 2 diabetes necessarily.
Yes, because we already showed that in those with type 2 diabetes, these things do reduce risks of cardiovascular events. So the top line results showed a decrease of 20% compared to placebo of cardiovascular events, and this includes heart attacks, strokes, angina. I'm sure angina, and they have their
whole
definition.
So it depends on if it's a it depends on the MACE that they studied. We don't have the publication yet. That's the problem. Generally, for semaglutide and type 2 diabetes and liraglutide, it was death from cardiovascular causes, non-fatal MI, non-fatal stroke.
Yeah. So I think that's very similar. I mean, I can pull it up, but it doesn't really matter. These things reduce the risk of cardiovascular events in those with cardiovascular disease. Now, whether this happens in those who are like athletes who just need to lose a few pounds, which these drugs shouldn't be prescribed in anyway, I don't know. There may be very low benefit. It's possible there's risk from just taking drugs just to take drugs, but we wouldn't recommend these drugs in those populations either. But I think this gives, just for those, the reductions in cardiovascular events in those with type 2 diabetes, this could have been predicted, but they wanted to see that, hey, is it just the glucose lowering? No, there's probably something about these drugs. Is it the weight loss? There's probably something related to the weight loss, but there's something probably about these drugs that have some sort of effect on the heart, since there's receptors all over the heart. So,
Well, let's think about where all these possible benefits can be. I mean, if you get more than 10% weight reduction, that's where we start to see cardiovascular risk reduction in general. And we know it's improving sugars. We know it's improving blood pressure. We know it's improving lipids, and all those things contribute to cardiovascular risk. And so all those things happen in these medications.
Okay, so the study's primary endpoint, I just pulled it up, is the first occurrence of MACE defined as cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI, myocardial infarction, which is a heart attack, or non-fatal stroke.
Somebody said that.
So they found a... No, I'm just making sure it's not.
I know. Well, and the reason we're talking about this, for people who now they're like, what the hell are they talking about? Because some trials, they include other, like you said, hospitalizations for angina and things like that, to have a bigger basket of risk reduction. So this is a little bit more really worthwhile, in my opinion. Some of the trials, like for the other medications, include hospitalization for heart failure, which we can talk about, and a lot of their benefits are driven from that specifically, not like heart attack, stroke, and cardiovascular death necessarily.
Yeah, so I think this is important. So this gives me, when people ask, what are the side effects of these medicines? What are the, these weight loss medicines are not good for the heart. Those are some of the older drugs that we've talked about that have this sympathomimetic activation, those like adrenaline, noradrenaline, those types of things.
And we don't have those anymore, by the way.
Yeah, we can't even prescribe them. So these drugs, the side effects are, you reduce your risk of heart attacks, it seems to be. If you're at high risk, we don't know about low risk, I assume.
And that's the other thing for people to think about. So when we talk about who should really be given these medications, the higher the risk, the higher the cardiometabolic disease, like diabetes, like high risk for heart disease or established heart disease, you get the most bang for the buck, very almost kind of literally. I mean, you get more of the health benefits as opposed to, lower amounts of adiposity and lower risk. If you're very otherwise pretty healthy, you don't get as much of the long-term benefit, technically.
Yeah. There are some good papers going over like what potentially could be going on here. I think, what is it? The Harmony trial? What was the Harmony trial? It was a drug. It was a,
with albiglutide.
So albiglutide, showed that one actually showed a decreased risk of cardiovascular events.
But it
doesn't really help that much with weight loss. So
it wasn't that robust even in glycemic control. In fact, it was essentially taken off the market a little bit for futility because it certainly was better than nothing. Don't get me wrong, but it didn't, compared to what we have available, it wasn't very good for weight reduction. It wasn't great for glycemic control, or blood pressure, all these other things. It had a little bit of all those benefits, but their study design, was a little bit different, but it had really, really significant cardiovascular risk reduction, but that didn't get published until it was basically gone.
Kaput. So I think that's one that people are using to go and like, hey, So it wasn't necessarily the weight loss that helped. It wasn't necessarily all the glycemia that helped. So maybe there's something about these drugs that help with the heart.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that the weight loss in this SELECT trial will prove out to be part of the equation. I don't know. Maybe I'm just biased because I think that losing weight should help. But,
well, and we know it does. Again, you start getting over 10% weight reduction, and all the data we have show that then that's where the cardiovascular benefits come into play. And we know with this generation of therapies, on average, and that's on average, by the way, we're getting over 10% weight reduction compared to placebo. So, yeah, that certainly is a good role that it's playing.
Yeah. So the other potential benefits, there are lipid benefits from these drugs. Obviously, they help with losing weight, which improve your lipids. But there may be some other components about them that help with some of those ApoB containing lipoproteins and some of the metabolism. That blood pressure improvements from the weight loss, inflammatory markers. You know, who knows? Either way, it's pretty cool to see that at least these drugs don't increase cardiovascular events like we saw with older generation weight management medicines. They, if anything, benefit, and it seems to be in high-risk people, there is a benefit. So the next trial that just got published, not just top-line results, was semaglutide done in those with heart failure, but specific type of heart failure called, they call it HFpEF, heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. So this is basically those with obesity are at a higher risk for this HFpEF heart failure with a preserved ejection fraction, because it basically is a thickening of the heart, and so not as much blood can flow into the heart, and they have, it's very debilitating, and they didn't have much help for these patients in the past.
Because people think of heart failure historically as
like a weak heart.
What we call reduced ejection fraction, where the ejection fraction is just the ability of the heart muscles to pump the blood through the rest of the body. So this is kind of more of a, you know, it's like, it's thicker, stiffening. Just the whole thing's not moving as much as opposed to not pumping as much. So these people pump appropriately. We probably need
there's just not enough. Yeah, just not enough blood can get into the heart. So it looks like the ejection fraction is normal.
Looks okay, yeah.
But the actual, it's just not as much. Yeah. So people get, it's debilitating. Quality of life is low because exercise tolerance is low. Just everything about, they feel tired. It's a pretty tough condition, disease. So they were like, well, let's try some semaglutide. Let's throw some semaglutide at these.
Because obesity is perhaps the leading driver of this type of heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting. It was, you know, relatively, you know, smaller compared to the SELECT trial, which has, you know, I think thousands in it. But this one had 529 patients with this HFpEF heart failure with a preserved ejection fraction, and those with a BMI of 30 and above. So they gave a semaglutide 2.4, that's the high dose of Wegovy, versus a placebo for a year. And so they looked at quality of life kind of measurements, this Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire, clinical summary scores. They looked at
6-minute walk distance.
6-minute walking distance. So again, we, you know, like if you have heart failure, even whether it's preserved or not preserved ejection fraction, like you see out of breath, like can't walk that far, exercise intolerance, quality of life. And pretty cool to see. They saw that those given the semaglutide had massive improvements in their quality of life scores, in their Kansas City questionnaire.
Yeah, with you know, they had 11% more weight reduction than placebo. Placebo had 2.5, and the semaglutide group had about 13.5% weight reduction on average,
which isn't even as high as what we usually see. So it's pretty cool that it worked that well, and there was this improvement. It's potentially, if you could get more weight loss, maybe there would be even more improvement here. Yeah. So they also saw, so I think what people would probably, you know, if they're thinking about this questionnaire, like, what does that questionnaire even mean? Whatever. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but I think what people would really understand is the 6-minute walking distance.
This is huge. This is a huge deal, I think.
Yeah. The change, they could go 21.5 meters, I believe, longer with the semaglutide versus, there was barely any change.
Just like
placebo.
one meter for extra for placebo. So, and that's so with effort, by the way. That's with like training.
Yeah. So think of like just like three feet. 3 feet difference in the placebo versus, I don't know, 60 whatever feet. That's yeah. You know, think about, okay, so think, we got to think of this practically. So think about people that are, you know, in their house, you know, I don't know how big their house is. Think about, you know, if they have stairs, going out to get the mail, just mm-hmm. doing little things like that. This is a massive difference and in being able to all of a sudden do those things.
Just the benefits from being able to do the exercise. Yeah. So you go from a vicious cycle to now a healthy, beneficial cycle, and suddenly everything gets better. And we know we're the shills for exercise as medicine. If you're able to exercise, then suddenly you're able to do even better health benefits.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. And so, you know, of course, you know, people are, what's the underlying cause? What's helping what? I mean, they're talking about the GLP-1 receptors on the heart. I think right. So, but there's, you know, that's a pretty big change in weight loss. And weight loss can have a massive effect on the quality of life and all these different measurements too. So,
I was just going to say, you know, the GLP-1 receptors on the heart and all that stuff. I mean, relative to the other medicines we talk a lot about in my clinic, especially the SGLT2 inhibitors, which are the like Jardiance and Farxiga for those out there that trick your kidneys into peeing out sugar. Those have like really, really, really dramatic benefits for heart failure, like that hospitalization for heart failure that I was talking about. So whereas these GLP-1 receptor agonists haven't necessarily shown that historically. And so it's been a little bit more neutral until this specific study showing, you know, and it does actually seem to me at first glance associated with the actual treatment of obesity and the weight reduction. And I think even in the editorial that was associated with talking to cardiologists, that's kind of what they certainly felt the same. So we're not just making this stuff up.
Yeah. We're not just shooting from the hip completely. I mean, we might be a little bit, but not. No, I mean,
we're in line with what the expert cardiologists getting interviewed for this are saying. So,
what this means is that, like, hey, you know, maybe there's some increased risk of increased beats per minute, but I think we can safely say that, like, hey, these things, if anything, there's benefit here, at least, especially if you're looking at high risk individuals. I'm not worried about, like, me or, you know, some of my very healthy patients just with extra weight. I'm thinking about, like, hey, the patient that comes in, they're like, I do have a history of HFpEF, you know, they're not going to say that, heart failure. And I have a history of cardiovascular disease. I'm like, actually, this drug will actually help you. I'm not worried about it's going to be like, I don't know what's going to happen here. Right. Let's hope it doesn't hurt them. It looks like there's benefit. So I think it's just really cool. It puts my mind at ease.
Absolutely. And then for those, you know, like Peter Tia being concerned about this extra 2 beats per minute heart rate issue. So we already know that the cardiovascular events are reduced. We know it's good for some of the heart failure potential benefits if we have weight reduction. Well, what about the arrhythmias where the heart rhythm gets funky, too fast or too funky, like atrial fibrillation or flutter, if people out there understand that? Because obesity, type 2 diabetes, all these things increase the risk of those arrhythmias, you know, especially atrial fibrillation. And so what about that? Well, there was that. Certainly that was a concern, right? If we're making the heart rate go up a little bit.
Especially if the SA note, like, I can imagine.
And we know, you know, there's good analysis, again, for those SGLT2 inhibitors, probably reducing that risk significantly. But the concern of the safety of these GLP-1 receptor agonists like semaglutide, Ozempic, Wegovy, et cetera. But actually, especially with weight reduction does seem to reduce the risk of AFib that is being caused by a lot of obesity. And there's at least one, I found one meta-analysis published less than a year ago, looking at all the trials, and actually seems like the GLP-1 receptor agonists are associated with a reduced risk for total arrhythmia, atrial arrhythmias, and even more so for people, again, with the higher risk, like type 2 diabetes and a history of heart attacks. So that's very reassuring to me.
Yeah. So when patients come in with a history of atrial fibrillation, I usually have them just discuss with the cardiologist, make sure they get clearance. Although, like, what's interesting, what I see from time to time is, are patients who say, wow, my rhythm is back under control and these types of things. Anecdotally, I have seen some people who didn't even know they had AFib that all of a sudden they go to the doctor and they're telling me they have a heart rate. Their watch is telling them it's 105 or 110. I'm like, you better get an EKG. Mm. And they had underlying atrial fibrillation. It wasn't it wasn't caused by the drug, but kind of interesting stuff. Another cardiologist told me that their patient with a pacer all of a sudden didn't need pacing anymore once they started the GLP-1. I don't know.
Wow.
These are all very interesting things. I don't want to hit anecdotes with anecdotes because it's not very helpful.
However, stuff. Yeah, I mean, like I told you, when I did that talk on the obesity and these medications. And then I did it with a cardiologist, a friend of mine up at Mackinac Island this past summer. And he really focused on the data of obesity driving atrial fibrillation. And I mean, he was very, supportive of using these medications for that purpose of reducing the risk and not just the old kind of cardio, heart-centric approach to AFib, but treating the obesity specifically with these medications. And he had plenty of data that he presented that seemed to support that. So between the two of us, it certainly made me feel comfortable with that too.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. So, I mean, honestly, I don't know what else we have to say about when the SELECT trial comes out, maybe we'll have one of the trialists on here.
When it actually is published, we'll talk more about the details because there will be far more details than we really know right now. Like, is it driven by cardiovascular, heart attacks? Is it driven by stroke? Kind of like the Ozempic trial in type 2 diabetes. That was actually driven mostly by stroke. Whereas like the liraglutide trial in type 2 diabetes, and this has to do with population differences. It had an actual significantly reduced death from cardiovascular causes, but the semaglutide one did not. But again, different patient populations, different numbers. But the good news is, reduced cardiovascular events between heart attack, stroke, death from cardiovascular disease. That's all good stuff.
The other interesting thing about the SELECT trial, it was massive plus longer. We're going to see how durable the weight loss was compared to any other trials that we've had. The STEP 5 trial went to 2 years. This one goes to 4 years at least. I think a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. They wanted to do it four to 5 years.
And it was almost 18,000 patients.
It's a lot.
That is nuts. No diabetes,
we're gonna get more,
but heart disease.
We're going to get more data here. Like, think about other things like, is there a signal for pancreatitis versus placebo? Is there a signal is it long enough to develop thyroid cancers? I don't know if they did any of that stuff anyway.
Well, they certainly would have, monitored for that. Absolutely. So we'll see. Yeah. This is a huge trial, many years. We're going to get a lot of good information from this when it gets published.
Very cool. All right. If you know of anybody that's like interested in these medicines and is worried about the heart, feel free to share this podcast with them. Give us a nice little review on whatever you're listening to, Spotify or Apple or whatever. Just again, we do not make money from Novo Nordisk or any of the other pharmaceutical companies yet. I don't know if we'll pull the trigger.
Yeah, the problem is we talk so much about this stuff specifically. It's hard, hate to have that conflict with this, but we would only ever give talks and get paid by things we feel like are scientifically appropriate and whatever. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, and we wouldn't do it for the money. We do it for a shitload of money.
We're not doing this for money. We're doing it for a shitload of money. Hope everyone has seen Spaceballs to understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a joke, but not really. Anyway. All right. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.